Hey, Lulu here. Whether we are romping through science, music, politics, technology, or feelings, we seek to leave you seeing the world anew. Radiolab adventures right on the edge of what we think we know, wherever you get podcasts.
1956, Lackawanna, New York. Like all Great Lakes cities was thriving. Jobs everywhere, money everywhere. Steel plants, railroads, grain mills, the docks. Everybody had a new car and a conk. Restaurants, bars, stores, everybody made money. The smell of fried fish, chicken.
That was Tony Award-winning, multi-hyphenate Ruben Santiago Hudson during a 2019 production of his one-man show, Lackawanna Blues. The play tells the story of Santiago Hudson's childhood and finds him embodying the many characters who populated his youth. Chief among his cast is Nanny, the woman who raised him. Santiago Hudson first performed the show in 2001, and in 2005, he adapted it to an HBO movie. Essapatha Murkison played the role of Nanny.
Wherever she at, you're going to have to go through me to get to her. Now go on, knock me down. Go on. If that's the onlyest way you know how to do things, knock Nanny down, because I can handle it.
This fall, Santiago Hudson has brought the show to Broadway for the first time, part of an exciting slate of works by Black playwrights being produced this season. I had the pleasure of seeing him perform Lackawanna Blues recently, and by the end, I was sobbing, just an absolute crying mess under my mask. Apparently, that's a fairly typical reaction.
I'm hearing that I'm messing up a lot of masks. Well, at least I have my hanky with me.
The ability to do any work on stage at this point in the pandemic era carries a certain emotional weight. But I also wanted to find out how performing such a personal work has felt for Santiago Hudson.
On so many levels, it's hit me on so many levels, and it's hard to really explain. There's no one emotion or one effect or one feeling that I have. I mean, the joy and exhilaration of being in front of a live audience again is one thing. The joy of being a sociable human being again, where you can share space with other people and somewhat feel pretty comfortable because of the protocols that we have put in place at the Manhattan Theater Club and the Broadway in general. That's one thing. Then another thing is the visit with the things that make my life and make me comfortable and also remind me of what I had to go through and what my responsibility and accountability is now that I'm here at this point. So it's so many different levels. And I try to avoid falling into or finding myself too captivated by any particular feeling, because I know my job as a storyteller is to invite you into a world that probably most people don't know. And to share a reality about the multiplicity of ideas and thoughts and feelings of people of color and how universal we are, but yet how specific we are and how beautiful and magnificent we are, and yet how disdainful and angry and joyful and all those feelings that get robbed away from us as people of color when other people are telling our stories.
I want to build on that for a second in two different ways. But I have to say my first reaction as I left, beyond the crying, which we'll talk about in a bit, I said to my husband as we stood outside, I said, I feel like maybe this is what Tyler Perry thinks he's doing, but that Ruben Santiago Hudson does it with a love and respect and interiority that I don't think I've ever experienced before. And that ability not only to mimic all of these characters, but to become them, I guess it's the deep empathy. I'm wondering as you do that, I'm wondering literally about the emotional exhaustion of standing inside of so many persons in a relatively short period of time.
Well, the emotional exhaustion is one thing, but the physical exhaustion is another. When you're playing 3-4 characters in one scene, and physically recreating what I remember of their gait, what I remember of their sound, their tone, their rhythms. So it's exhausting on all levels, but it also is incredibly empowering, because all of a sudden I give these people, once again, from my viewpoint as an 11-year-old boy, I give these people again worth. I give them a place that's their own. And just to talk a little bit about what you mentioned about what Tyler Perry might be doing, that's a complex conversation because, Tyler Perry has revealed the impact and power of the African-American community's money and if they want to support something. Where he and I part ways is I think there are many more stories and that he can share with many more storytellers. And I think that's a big problem. And this is another subject, but that's a big problem in our artistic community as African-American people and BIPOC people is, are we really empowering the village the way other communities empower their village, the way the Jewish community empowers their village and supports their stories and other artists like them, the way Asian people do the same. I mean, listen, I've been in this business 45 minutes and without bragging, but just looking at the facts, I have been heralded in every aspect of what I do as a writer, director, and actor. But yet no one has ever said, what stories do you want to tell, Rube? They want to hire me for jobs. And, you know, you do this job or do that job. No one has just sat down and said, what's the most important thing you think that our community should hear and that you can clearly and most profoundly tell that story to us in the next decade? So we want you to sit down and we want to bust your brain wide open and your heart wide open and share. No one has ever come to me with that. You look in the paper today in any Variety or Hollywood Reporter, somebody's got a 3-picture deal. Rubens Lackawanna Blues won more awards than anything that season, had more viewers than anything that season, never got a deal or multiple deal. My Jitney won Tony's. I didn't, you know, the state, August Wilson Estate didn't offer me another August Wilson play. You know, Lackawanna Blues was shut down in 2001 until the pandemic. I had to put it on the road myself, you know, so, and here it is, you know, 20 years later with this country in absolute turmoil, and it was absolutely, we're trying to rebuild now, as you know, as we all know, but, and they needed Nanny to say it's going to be okay again. So they needed this product, that this love letter that I owned, and I'm back. So, but we, the Tyler Perrys, the bigger people, not to pick on him, I think their mission, it's just my opinion, should be to, how do we empower the village? Where's the village being built stronger? Not where's my empire being built stronger? Not in just hiring people, in getting artists that you respect, that you think are very talented, that have vision and have a lot to say, that's important to our community. I think Nanny is important to our community. I'm not going to run on this. I know we got short time. But that woman who is the rock and foundation of the African-American community that's never heralded, that's never celebrated, and people say, give them their flowers now. Well, here's your flowers, Nanny. Here's your flowers, Aunt Vi. Here's your flowers, Aunt Minnie. Here's your flowers, Big Mama. Here's your flowers, Mom Overton. You know, that's empowering our community, reminding us of the foundation that we stand on.
What you just said cut through something politically critical. You said they needed Nanny to come back and tell them it was all going to be okay.
Yeah. But think about it, Melissa. Think about it. Think about it in all these old movies and stuff. Who's the one that's hugging the little white child, that's distraught? Who's the one that's coming in? And you know, they always just use that aspect of these Black women and be the comfort and be the wisdom, but they don't use that, all the rest of that stuff. Where were their faults? Where did they fall short? And how did they build it back up? What about the other things? When that big Paul Bunyan, when that big John Henry, when that big iconic Black figure walks in and he needs that shoulder, and also he needs to advice and needs to be told what the hell to do. That's Mama.
I think you also just went to the core of the only discomfort I felt sitting in the audience, which is when you tell Nanny's story, you're telling a story I recognize as my Nana, who I just lost. I recognize nearly every single person you embodied, a particular love that is does not allow any foolishness, but also is without limits. But sometimes the laughter from non-Black people in the audience at particular moments, and moments that are funny, that have to be told in order to tell the full humanity of the story. Ooh, still, it kind of like would get me. And I just wanted to sometimes turn around and be like, shh, no, not you.
Yeah. You know, but the good thing about that, you know, I mean, sometimes it's difficult for me as well, particularly when I say something and I'm using the colloquial language that I knew and things, you know, half pressed head, can I grease your scalp? You know, things that are ours. We own that, just like the blues, just like jazz never existed before us. And their sayings and things that never existed before us, the way they're said, the rhythms, the style. And that's what's great about August Wilson's work in a sense. I mean, saying things like half pressed head or you my baby, or I ain't gonna say it no more, or listen to me good now. You know, and these are quotes that I've heard. Mm-hmm. These is not imagination. When Nanny went to get Mr. Taylor, the one-legged man with the tongue, mm-hmm. you know, the little problem, when I traveled with her, I was carrying a pot for him to eat. And in that pot was chicken feet and dumplings. And so I'm not ashamed to say that's what we brought. And some people may say, ugh and oh, but if you go to France right now, to Paris and order chicken, the feet's going to be on it.
No, that just made me hungry. When you said it, I was like, oh, now yeah. I got to sit here another hour. And now that's what I want.
You think about them dumplings. And then she gave him a sweet potato to keep his hands warm. Now, where's that from? That's on in my house at Nanny. She had sweet potatoes. We had a wood burning stove. Like we didn't have a pot belly. We had a wood burning in the kitchen because we were in Buffalo. We needed more heat. And she always had sweet potatoes sitting on the top, wrapped in aluminum foil or by themselves or in a pan, a flat pan. So if you wanted a quick dessert, a quick lift, you take and you split that sweet potato in 4 or 5 pieces, put a little butter on it, maybe a little sugar if you want, yeah, a little brown sugar. And that was your, you know, and you could take that, put it in your hand and keep your hands warm too before you eat it. So that's my culture. What I'm trying to do is share the incredible depth and beauty of our culture. And that yam goes all the way back to Africa. See, if you really look at the lineage of what I'm saying in that play about our journey, the African diaspora, the migration, you know, the forced migration, the snatching of the slavery, that's one thing. But that was a migration that we had no control of. But the other migration we had control of, but we brought all those other things with us. The way we sing, the way we dance, the way we court. I had my harmonica on stage. It's more than entertainment. It's enlightenment.
What is the most important story that you want to tell that you think audiences need to hear right now?
If I had my druthers, I would do probably a 5-part Harlem Renaissance. I mean, a huge epic. If they did Roots twice, that we were slaves twice in Roots and we got over that and the victory is ours today. But who has really hit the Harlem Renaissance other than just a 2-hour movie? Let's go through the intellectual aspect of it, the musical aspect of it, the sexual revolution that was taking place, the political revolution that was taking place, the religious fervor that was going on, the movements, the Garveyisms, the political stuff. Let's do 5 parts. Let's don't truncate it. So I've been offered to do, you know, 2 hours. And I just said, I'm not going to do it. My stubbornness. I can't hardly get through Madam C.J. Walker. The real story opposed to what I saw, nothing against them. That's theirs. But the woman who wrote the book, she wasn't even happy, you know, because they didn't let her tell her story. So give me 5 parts. Let me get a host of writers, a host of historians, a host of dramaturgs, a host of 5 directors, you know, and every Black actor in Hollywood that wants to be a part of it. And let's do it and do it right. That's when we were kings and queens again. And that's important to me. And I don't know if in my lifetime I'll get it done. But, you know, I spoke to Lou Gossett and Whoopi and different people and they want to get it done. But we're not empowering the village. Mm-hmm. We have the wherewithal to do it. We have studios. We have billionaires who are Black people. What happened is, like, even me, when we reach a certain level, the white establishments takes you and provide something for you financially and position wise. But you work with them. The Black folks, why am I not at OWN? Why am I not at Tyler Perry? Why am I not at Macro? Am I not visible? And this ain't no complaint because, mm-hmm. you know, I'm looking more at the end of my career. I'm looking mm-hmm. more at retirement now and I'm empowering the young generation. I have mentees getting ready to take over this whole thing. That's going to be the next stars in the next 4 years. But we need to be supported. We need to be financed. We need to be there are white bullies out there that stop a lot of things I'm trying to do. I need one Black bully to stand with me and say, we ain't stopping this man. He wants to empower our village.
And your village is also complex, being yes. both Black and Puerto Rican, being part of the Afro-Latinidad. Talk to me a bit about that particular intersection.
Well, you know, having that duality of cultures, which they also come down to a certain stream where it's the same culture, but there is a complete and specific delineation between those cultures. And then there's, like I say, a coming together. I am as proud of being Puerto Rican Boricua as I am of being Black. The thing is, I was raised in a Black rooming house with country people from the South. So that's my gait. That's my rhythm. That's my sound. But I love, you know, my father, Ruben Santiago, whose story I didn't tell in this play, was very, very loving in day to day with me growing up. To the point whereas when he's the one that went and got me from my mother's people, when my mother left me originally early, she left me with her family in Pennsylvania, in Pittsburgh. My father drove from Buffalo to Pittsburgh and pleaded his case and said, let his mother raise me, who was Nanny. They thought it was going to be his real mother, but it was he called Nanny Ma. and Nanny got me. And when my black family found out I was with this woman who wasn't my mother, they had a conversation, and Nanny convinced them that she would send me to Pittsburgh with them in the summer and keep me in one place so I can get my education. My father, who wanted me to move with him, he moved next door to Nanny, three doors away, so he could see me every day. So he took me to Puerto Rico as a child, you know, a few times. I took him as he got older when I became successful. So my next project after Skeleton Crew is a Latin musical. Musical was really a play with a lot of music by a Mexican writer named Karen Zacarias. Destiny of Desire is the name of it. I'm starting to find my root, my way into the Latin culture, the multiplicity of that culture, because that's where you're talking Cuban, Mexican, Spanish, Portuguese. We're talking Brazil and you know, Dominican Republic and Puerto Rico. So I'm trying to figure out, how do I build that now? You know, so it's beautiful, though, because, you know, when somebody asks me my favorite dish, you know, and it's a simple thing, but I love my rice and beans. You know, I can eat them every day. And my daughter's just like me, Lily. You know, she's an actor on the show La Brea on NBC. And you ask her favorite dish. Me and her said eat a plate of rice and beans every day if we could. That's that Puerto Rico in me.
Ruben Santiago Hudson, Tony Award-winning theater artist and writer, director, and star of Lackawanna Blues. Ruben, I just want to say, I want to see that five-part Harlem Renaissance piece. I want to live that. So I hope that you are able to make it.
Well, thank you. And I greatly appreciate this opportunity to speak with you and all the work that you're doing. I've been following you for a while, and I'm excited to see what you're doing in the future. And I appreciate it.